From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Ira Melman. More possible terrorist attacks in Egypt. Two Austrians and a Swede who were stabbed in an attack on a hotel in Egypt's Red Sea resort of Hurghada were only slightly wounded, and they're in stable condition today. A hospital official who requested anonymity in line with regulations said they suffered shallow wounds. Two suspected militants attacked the three at a hotel in Hurghada late Friday. Security forces shot both attackers, killing one and wounding the other before arresting him. Sami Olofsson from Sweden talked about his injuries lying in his hospital bed.
I had my back towards the door, and the first thing I notice personally is that I get a guy coming in and should stab me here.
In your shoulder?
No, in my heart.
Heart. Yeah.
Yes, but he only gets here. One cut here. Mm. I'm very fortunate here that he doesn't get here, because I put my hands up. One guy, I feel him coming over my shoulders. Mm. My instant reaction is to push him off, and I do that, so he only gets here.
Olofsson was pointing to his shoulder when he said that. It was the second hotel attack in as many days. An Islamic State affiliate claimed the attack Thursday on a hotel in Cairo near the pyramids that did not wound anyone. Egypt has been battling an insurgency based on the northern Sinai Peninsula that grew following the 2013 military overthrow of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. While gunmen later in the day killed two Egyptian police officers west of Cairo as they were driving to work, Egypt's Interior Ministry says the officers have been deployed to investigate the shooting, which took place Saturday in the Giza district. This is VOA News. Hundreds of French mosques opened their doors to the public Saturday and will do so again tomorrow in an effort to educate non-Muslims about their culture at a time when Islamic extremist attacks have fostered negative impressions of the faith. While not all of France's 2,500 mosques are participating in the event, the most prominent ones are, including the Grand Mosque of Paris. The effort is backed by the country's leading Muslim body, the French Council of the Muslim Faith. The president of the group, Anwar Kibikvech, told reporters that the mosques are inviting people to meet normal Muslims and partake in refreshments, guided tours, workshops and discussions, or even one of the five daily prayer sessions. The event, dubbed a brotherly cup of tea, takes place between the first anniversary of the extremist attacks on the satirical Charlie Hebdo magazine January 7th and on January 11th, which is the anniversary of the day millions of people took to the streets to show solidarity with the victims of those attacks. Fugitive Mexican drug trafficker Joaquin El Chapo Guzman has been sent back to the Altiplano prison after being recaptured some 7 months after he escaped from the facility. Guzman was arrested Friday during a raid in the city of Los Mochis in Guzman's home state of Sinaloa. Hours later, he was shown to reporters dressed in a blue shirt and track pants, being transferred from an armored van to a helicopter that was to take him and at least one accomplice back to prison. Mexican Attorney General Arely Gomez-Gonzalez, who spoke to reporters late Friday, says Guzman's recapture was the product of a huge surveillance operation that involved a film crew that had been working on a biography of the drug trafficker. The Mexican Marines, acting on a tip, raided a home in Los Mochis just before dawn on Friday. Hundreds of far-right demonstrators gathered in the German city of Cologne to protest a rash of sexual assaults and robberies that took place during New Year's Eve celebrations in that city. The attacks, which have been blamed on men of North African and Arab origin, fueled calls for tighter controls on the country's immigration policies. Saturday, hundreds of protesters from the anti-immigrant Pegida movement carried flags and banners, while nearby separate rallies were held by left-wing counter-demonstrators and a group protesting violence against women. Hundreds of police have been deployed near the city's main train station, with some mild clashes reported. German Chancellor Angela Merkel Saturday proposed changes to German law that would make it easier to deny asylum to refugees convicted of crimes. Chinese officials are investigating the bulldozing of a hospital with patients and doctors still inside in an incident that left bodies from the hospital morgue buried under a pile of rubble.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
Happy to be in Mbale today, which is in eastern Uganda. However, along the way, we got to learn that the president would be commissioning a new road in the same area.
The former Prime Minister of Uganda's presidential campaign team says the Electoral Commission violated its own directive that aims to equal the playing field ahead of the upcoming election.
Everyone is expecting that this year's election will be credible. Because of what happened in the 2012 election.
The Ghana Bar Association calls on its members to help the Electoral Commission to administer a transparent and credible general election in November.
L'effondrement des prix du cours du pétrole s'impose à la CEMOC comme ce que j'appellerais une nouvelle réalité. Dans certains cas, il faudra sans aucun doute...
She says drastically reducing petroleum prices have had negative consequences.
And the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, urges countries in the Central African region to diversify their economies. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The presidential campaign team of former Prime Minister Patrick Amama Mbabazi of Uganda says the Electoral Commission has violated its own directive that called on all presidential candidates to strictly adhere to approved harmonized campaign programs to prevent inter-party clashes. This after Mr. Mbabazi petitioned the Electoral Commission about his concerns that incumbent President Yoweri Museveni was scheduled to campaign in Mbale in eastern Uganda, the same place that the Electoral Commission approved the former Prime Minister to campaign on Saturday. Josephine Mayanja Nkanji, spokesperson for the former Prime Minister, told me the Electoral Commission appears to be biased by failing to stop Mr. Museveni from commissioning a new road in the area which forms part of his campaign.
What happened was we are required to work out a schedule that works not only for the Electoral Commission but for all the other candidates. So we were scheduled, or the candidate was scheduled to be in Mbale today, which is in eastern Uganda. However, along the way, we got to learn that the president would be commissioning a new road in the same area. So the Electoral Commission actually did not respond in writing. As far as I know, they actually sort of went on TV, the spokesperson, and said, you know, that wouldn't be the case. It wouldn't be a problem because the president does have his presidential duties. There wouldn't be a conflict. It wouldn't be the exact same place at the same time. So everything should be okay. However, yesterday he did recant those statements and said, no, we were sort of hallucinating. The president wasn't going to be in the area at all. So I don't know exactly what's what.
So your campaign is displeased with the way the Electoral Commission handled the situation of the scheduling conflict. Is that the case?
Well, yes. I mean, we're not very happy with it. We are being told we have to accept the fact that, you know, the president is a president, so he does have presidential duties that supersede the electoral schedule. So apart from the fact that he is a candidate, above all else, he is the president. So if he does have duties that they consider not campaigning, then there is no conflict.
Are you officially going to protest this action? Do you have any avenue by which you can launch a protest concerning this, since the Electoral Commission gave a specific directive asking the police to enforce this directive?
I don't know if our lawyers are going to take it up or not.
The police have come out to say that your campaign seemed to be making very wild allegations about some of your members being intimidated, harassed, and some arrested or being made to disappear. What is your response to such criticisms coming from the police and, for that matter, some other security agencies?
The police is being very dishonest because we have, even apart from the cases that were mentioned, Mama talked about, there's so many more. I know of a young man from Karamoja who was taken on the day of the manifesto. You know, right after the manifesto, he was going to Uganda House to get a copy, and then he was taken. and he was found days late. In fact, we looked for him, went to all the different police stations, and then finally he was taken to one of the police stations that we had already been at. This young man is, you know, is maimed permanently, is undergoing treatment, and that's a case he didn't even mention his name. So I think the police is being disingenuous. However, if they think that we are the ones who are not telling the truth, the onus is on them, you know, to prove it, because we've called out the cases. Now it's on them to prove exactly what happened in these specific cases. They have to release the reports. If they, you know, the IGP said that he would take us to court because of this, I think he does need to do that, because all that we want is for the truth to be heard and to be treated fairly and justly, because we do not think that, you know, this election should be about forcing people to think a certain way or mistreating them because they refuse to think a certain way.
Well, what do you say to your critics who say that because your campaign appears to be faltering, your campaign appears to be mudslinging other candidates, and for that matter, President Museveni, because you are setting the ground to reject the outcome of the election, knowing that he is going to win the election fair and square? What's your response to that?
Again, I would say, you know, I don't know what faltering is. I don't know what that means. They would have to define what faltering is to me, because we continue to follow the schedule that we set out for ourselves. So no schedule has been canceled this far. You know, whenever we've changed schedule, we've continued anyway. So I don't know what they're talking about. We have no need to mudsling the president. We have said this election should be about ideas, and we have kept this about ideas from the very beginning. The fact that our people are being taken, are being killed, are disappearing, that's a fact. And if anyone wants to disprove it, they're welcome to. We'd be more than happy to have these people with us. You know, that would be our joy, for us to have our people. You know, if we could bring back some of them who are dead, that would be even better. You know, otherwise we have no interest in politicizing death. Who does that?
Josephine Mayanja Nkanji is the spokesperson for Uganda's former prime minister's presidential campaign. She spoke with me from Imbale in eastern Uganda. The Ghana Bar Association, or GBA, has called on lawyers in the country to help explain the electoral laws to prospective voters in a bid to ensure November's presidential, legislative and local elections are transparent and credible. Some civil society organizations had expressed concern that a lot of people are not aware of their rights and responsibilities during elections as required by law. Tony Forson, spokesman for the GBA, told me that the organization is ready to partner with the Electoral Commission in the electoral body's quest to administer credible elections.
Well, everyone is expecting that this year's election will be credible because of what happened in the 2012 election, that it went to court and the recommendations which were made by the Supreme Court with regard especially to election officers. So in this year's New Year message, the president of the bar thought it would be apt to call on the members of the GBA to volunteer. The view is towards having a credible election. So some people who may not can help the Electoral Commission by way of education of polling officers, so those who think that they are very much politically aligned could help their own political parties in the training of their polling agents. So that was the mindset of the president in making the call, that lawyers should avail themselves of this opportunity to help make the 2016 elections credible. So that was the basis on which the president made that call.
Has the GBA officially, you know, made overtures to the Electoral Commission in this directive so the GBA doesn't come under criticism for helping when helping is not needed, if I should put it that way?
Well, I don't believe that helping is not needed. I believe that every little help, as the Tesco advert says, every little helps. So we believe that in view of the kind of criticisms which were leveled against the electoral officers, we thought that that is one area in terms of personnel that the GBA, with the expertise that it has, could help. Indeed, one interview I did, somebody drew my attention to the fact that the former president, President Jerry John Rawlings, had made a suggestion that they should use the members of the military to help, because the military in addition to their discipline, they also have professionals. So I believe that everybody helps towards making Ghana the beacon of Africa. It's welcome. That is my belief anyway.
So will this also involve going to the mass media in terms of TV, radio stations, and even on social media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook to educate Ghanaians in this direction?
That is so. That is absolutely correct. Indeed, it's one of the things that I have realized personally with my 8 years as when I was National Public Relations Officer, was that some of these basic concepts are not understood by the majority of the people, even people who are educated, because these are issues sometimes which border on law, and education is the only way to go. So, yes, Twitter, Facebook, anything that will help people understand and appreciate, one, the problems, and two, how to go about solving the problems. Because, for example, a lot of, even sometimes very educated people don't understand the electoral law, the LI, which talks about no verification, no vote. There were other provisions of those laws which people didn't know about, the discretion of the electoral officers and all these things. So I believe that the call of the DBA president will put the lawyers on their toes, even to study, because if they are going to be in the position of explaining things to people, then of course they will have to study the electoral law themselves and apply their knowledge to the education process.
What would be the GBA's message to the people of Ghana ahead of the election?
Oh, the most important message will be that of political tolerance and understanding, because basically it's a competition of ideas. I believe that every political party has the good of the country at heart, and every political party believes that he has a way of bringing success and a good life there on the lives of Ghanaians. Therefore, the GBA will believe that everyone should have that heart to listen to the other side of every political debate, so that together we build a happy and prosperous nation.
Tony Forsen is the spokesman for the Ghana Bar Association, or GBA. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. International Monetary Fund Chief Christine Lagarde urged Central African states Friday to diversify their economies, which have been hit by plummeting petroleum prices and terrorism. The IMF Managing Director's three-day visit to Cameroon comes at a time when the war against terrorism and the crisis in the Central African Republic have negatively impacted the region's economies. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Christine Lagarde says although all six Central African states counted on their petroleum resources to improve their economies, Gabon, Chad and Equatorial Guinea have suffered most as a result of reducing world prices. She says they did not diversify their economies like Cameroon did. Lagarde says Cameroon's economy has also been affected by the war against the terrorist group Boko Haram, while the crisis in the Central African Republic made its economy decline sharply, and the Republic of Congo has suffered the effects of the economic downturn.
À l'évidence, l'effondrement des prix du cours du pétrole s'impose à la CEMOC comme ce que j'appellerais une nouvelle réalité. Dans certains cas, il faudra sans aucun doute.
She says drastically reducing petroleum prices have had negative consequences on the economies of the six Central African states. She says it is now imperative to drastically reduce ambitious development plans and invest wisely in projects that will improve the living conditions of grassroots populations. She says Central African member states need to diversify their economies, promote regional integration and the free movement of people and goods, and work together to find solutions to their common problems, because unity is strength. The IMF estimates that performance in 2014 and 2015 deteriorated as a result of stagnating revenue and increasing expenditures. It says lots of infrastructural projects are being financed by foreign borrowing, thereby raising debt levels. Overall fiscal deficit worsened from 4.1% of GDP in 2013 to about 6% in 2015. Alamin Usman May, Cameroon's Minister of Finance, says in spite of the challenges, his country's economy has shown some resiliency because of the diversification that developed value chains in agriculture, the construction sector, and energy supply.
Deux choses nous indiquent de manière claire et précise cette résilience.
He says his country has been resilient to economic and security shocks because it has diversified its economy. International oil prices have more than halved between 2014 and 2015, making it very difficult for the region where five out of its six member nations are oil producers. Additionally, terrorist threats that spilled over from Nigeria to Cameroon and Chad disturbed economic activity and generated additional budgetary spending. Luka Abagan-Chama, governor of the Bank of Central African States, BEAC, blames the adverse effects on the international economic downturn and difficulties promoting integration in the region. He says in spite of the challenges, the Central African currency CFA used in the region remains strong.
L'intérêt des pays de la CEMAC aujourd'hui est...
He says it is imperative for Central African states to promote regional integration and preserve its monetary union. He says it is in difficult moments that the strength of a currency is measured and that the CFA franc has always been solid in times of crisis. He says the central bank will maintain monetary stability as one of the main conditions to achieve growth and that they are not thinking of changing the region's currency. Christine Lagarde said her main call is for Central African countries to implement reforms that will promote stronger and more inclusive growth and reduce social inequalities. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The World Health Organization reports more life-saving cholera vaccine will soon be available to help nations struggling to contain outbreaks of the killer disease. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Two manufacturers currently produce 3 million doses of cholera vaccine. The World Health Organization says the global supply is set to double this year after it approved a third company to produce the vaccine. The producer, a South Korean company called EU Biologics, is the latest oral cholera vaccine manufacturer to be approved under the WHO's pre-qualification program, which ensures the quality, safety, and efficacy of the product. Dr. Stephen Martin, an expert in WHO's Emergency Vaccines and Stockpiles Division, calls it good news. He says the doubling of the global stockpile of oral cholera vaccines to 6 million doses will help address chronic shortages. He says last year, WHO had more demand for the product than it could meet. As a consequence, he says the agency had to turn down requests from Sudan and Haiti for the vaccine.
We've used it largely in outbreaks and humanitarian crises, but this additional producer will permit us to perhaps go even further and to start using the vaccine in endemic situations, which is predictable. Time and time again, in many countries, you can see the rainy season starting and the cholera cases increasing.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal disease that can kill within hours if left untreated. Globally, an estimated 1.5 billion people are at risk of cholera. The WHO reports there are up to 4.3 million cases a year, with as many as 142,000 deaths. The disease is endemic in more than 50 countries. Martin says a cholera vaccination campaign is due to begin in Haiti at the end of the month. Unfortunately, he adds, it will be a reduced campaign as the WHO only will be able to supply 240,000 of the 800,000 doses requested by the government. He says WHO expects more manufacturers will come forward to produce the vaccine. Increased production, he notes, will lead to lower prices. He says he expects the current price of $1.85 a dose will go down to $1.45 a dose. He says he expects the demand for the vaccine will be particularly high in Africa this year. He says climate change and the El Nino weather phenomenon are contributing to more frequent outbreaks of cholera, and it is likely behind recent outbreaks seen in places such as Tanzania, Malawi, and Kenya. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ivory Coast inaugurated a huge new shopping mall last month, a further sign that the former economic jewel of West Africa may be regaining its sparkle. For VOA, Emily Eob reports from Abidjan on efforts to attract investors and continue the recent trend of strong economic growth.
When the latest shopping mall opened in Ivory Coast economic capital Abidjan, President Alassane Ouattara himself was at the inauguration. The commercial center sprawls across 20,000 square meters and is the biggest of its kind in the West Africa sub-region. The mall includes the first regional stores by French retailer Carrefour and American fast food chain Burger King. These are just the latest example of foreign investment in the country, whose economy is bouncing back 5 years after post-election unrest claimed the lives of 3,000 people. With an average annual growth of 9% in the past 4 years, the country has become the rising economic star in West Africa. A few days ago, the Center for the Promotion of Investment in Ivory Coast, or CPC, was holding an assessment of its activities in 2015, and the mood was good.
Voilà, félicitations et merci beaucoup. Voilà.
On stage, CPC General Manager Esmail Emmanuel Essis thanks a Moroccan investor who is about to create another multi-million dollar project in the country. Direct foreign investment made up an estimated 69% of the total investment in Ivory Coast during 2015, said Essis. Fears of political volatility were unfounded.
Tout le monde disait qu'il n'y aura pas d'investissement parce que c'est la période électorale. L'investisseur aussi.
He said that some were saying there would be no investment in Ivory Coast in 2015 during the presidential election period. Investors get worried, but it's our role to show them that hope exists. The president proved that the elections were free, fair, and peaceful. In November, Ouattara, a former economist, was re-elected on the promise that he will make Ivory Coast an emerging country by 2020. The country has regained its position as the world's leading cocoa producer, and the government has been investing in big infrastructure projects and implementing reform to try and improve the business environment, including the adoption of a new investment code. The International Monetary Fund representative in Ivory Coast, Alain Feller, says the economic recovery is also due to a sense of relief after years of crisis.
When you are down and you come up, this already gives you an element of rebound. A good environment, it also helps. If you have good policies to take advantage of this, it adds to that performance.
Feller says the next challenge for Ivory Coast is to sustain that momentum.
It's important to take good advantage of the environment, but also prepare for maybe sometime a volatility, tougher time in the future. There is a great potential, but a challenge also to be able to make it sustainable for a long time, and this is what will actually make a transformation for Côte d'Ivoire.
The IMF has forecast that Ivory Coast GDP will grow again this year by 8.6%. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. President Barack Obama will deliver his final State of the Union address. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss his speech and his foreign policy agenda for Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Next on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests take a look at upcoming elections in Africa in the year 2016. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent, then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Well, it's time for our African collection of music. A special greeting to Senior Ralph Ade Thompson and Mrs. Irene Ifua Thompson on the occasion of your wedding. This is from Absu 95 Year Group. Enjoy this African music collection.
Resume music, make all the girls they shake the bum bum. Ah, she dancing for Lagos, America, down to London. She looking at me like a bibolaji, spending money like a young galaji. She won't do me cause she know I'm a G. Ah yeah, open me G. Jeje moje party. Ah yeah, open me G. I'm a yaoni bready. Maro peto reni oda. Oluwa ni shola. Another body be pira. Ashale para wa oya.
Baby name,
Manya, Manya, oh, Manya.
Oh, yeah, what is your baby name? my baby bed. Panya scatter the fluff for me.
Do you know my baby? Her name is Panya. That in Africa lady, yo. Panya, oh my Panya, they scatter my brain, yo. Beautiful lady, yo. That in Africa lady, yo. I sing in the song for Panya. And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya.
Anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya, yeah.
Panya, what is my baby name? Panya, Panya, Panya. Panya, what is your baby name? Panya, Panya, Panya. I request for my baby girl.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Panya, scatter the fluff for me.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
She's my fan, baby. When she come around, she a heavyweight. She a dance, she a move, immediate. Baby, yeah, I am. Aya, what is my baby name?
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Aya, what is your baby name?
Panya, Panya, Panya.
I request for my baby girl.
Panya, Panya, Panya.
Panya, scatter the fluff for me.
Panya, Panya, Panya. And I thank you the Lord for Panya. You must love I have for you.
Abi,
hey. Aya, what is my baby name?
Oh, yeah, make me go to Bobo. Oh, yeah, Jamboree.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It is always nice to present my reflections on U.S. politics to Africa. At the same time, every week I have the opportunity to share my views with the listeners of the Voice of America. A number of issues are brought to the attention of the audience. As we move to the second week of the year 2016, we are destined to witness a number of events around the world. American policy towards Africa is changing every day because of the nature of the relationship between the continent of Africa with the world. Today, I just want to look at how the world system is affecting U.S. policy in a very remarkable way, because the average American living in different parts of these United States. So human relationships between Americans and Africans become a very important issue to look at, because the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, is going to be giving his State of the Union, which is very important for himself, his family, the American people, because Americans have given him the opportunity to lead the country, addressing a large number of issues around the world. And those issues describe not only American foreign policy towards the world, but in this particular case, very important issues relating to Africa. So if you take a historical view, you can see how the State of the Union President Obama is going to give to the world is going to really reveal how he had negotiated the stormy waters of American society and is now coming to the end of his tenure as President of the United States. Like all other people who came, there is a parallel and there is a fundamental difference between his State of the Union with all the others who came before him. When you look at the historical narrative with regard to U.S. policy towards Africa, you can see today the African governments are still dealing with the problem of nation building and state building. That was why an American political scientist, Simon Martin Lipset, wrote a very interesting paper with regard to parallel between these United States and Africa. At that time, Simon Martin Lipset, writing in the 60s, was talking about Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana and George Washington in the United States. Foreign policy and state building issues came together. And that's one reason why when President Obama is going to give his State of the Union and he talks about the world, he will be dealing with issues out of the Middle East, Ukraine, and other parts of the world, which are very new issues. One of his predecessors had problems that are very different from the presence of President Washington. Washington was worried about the new republic and how the new republic can come into being. Simon Martin Lipset was trying to show how the role of charisma affects relationship between the founding fathers of the United States and the founding fathers of Ghana under Kwame Nkrumah. Because Nkrumah was a very interesting metaphor, very interesting spirit to describe the relationship between Africa and the world. Today, President Obama, being the fourth African-American to sit at the White House, is going to give a farewell address to the Americans with regard to what he has accomplished. Many of his accomplishments are due to history beyond his imagination. The most important task Barack Hussein Obama accomplished is to make sure that he was able to carry the baton from George Washington to himself, 44 presidents, and keep America intact. That's the way it is today.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineers for today, Nick Ivanov and Greg Burns. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a river does not flow through the forest without knocking down trees. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sexual violence and conflict is an atrocity that stands in the way of peace, prosperity, and gender equality. In Iraq and Syria, ISIL is making life hell for women and girls. The situation is especially grim for members of minority populations. Thousands of girls and women were abducted by ISIL last summer. Many, including girls as young as 7 or 8, were repeatedly raped and forced to marry ISIL fighters. Others have been sold as slaves. The United States is providing both humanitarian aid and other kinds of assistance. But the international community needs to do more to protect and better serve women and girls affected by the conflict. For example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, sexual violence has become a weapon that destroys lives, fuels conflict, and stands in the way of lasting peace. The U.S. is working to build a coherent approach to justice. Judges are holding open trials in local areas so witnesses can testify in their own communities. In turn, those communities can see firsthand that sexual violence will not go unpunished and that impunity will not be tolerated. Sexual violence and conflict continues to be a global problem that we need to address. In many headlines, women are portrayed as victims. And while there's no doubt that far too many women and girls are survivors of gender-based violence, it's not the whole story. Women are also incredible agents of change. They wield influence in their communities. They bring unique insights to decision-making tables. They increase the effectiveness of government. Gender-based violence, including sexual violence and conflict, holds women and girls back from participating fully in society. The repercussions negatively impact whole communities, halting development and leading to poorer educational, health, and economic outcomes. Tackling gender-based violence is crucial if we hope to unleash women's and girls' full potential and promote stability and economic growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.